we will move on now to safe areas. And Charles Ingrow and Darko Gavrilovic.
Thank you, Don. Last night, as we were checking into our hotel, my colleague here, Mila B. Elias, expressed our common appreciation of the wonderful accommodations that we had received through the hard work of Megan Chobolowski. We are located in a place in Arlington that's particularly nice. And he commented how important it was that we were staying in a safe area of Washington without actually meaning to make that connection. And, of course, we stopped in the middle of the street, which was not a safe area, and sort of looked at him. It's fitting that Safe Areas follows the international community and the SRI belligerents because this whole problem of the safe areas stems from the pusillanimity of the international community and their cynicism and their attempt to use fig leaves to cover their own lack of courage or indeed national interest. And so our report begins by talking about the rather perverse politics that goes into the creation of these six safe areas, beginning with Srebrenica and quickly extending to the other five that we know. And indeed, for the purpose of this chapter, we among the interviews we conducted, which was with military officials who were present in the siege of Sarajevo, with Diego Aria, the Venezuelan diplomat in the Security Council, who was the most ardent supporter of some kind of a safe areas resolution, only to then turn against it when he realized that it was so much of a sham. And other individuals, Bill Stubner, for example, was very helpful in dealing with some of the issues concerning the mortar massacres in Sarajevo. And as this project, this particular team report has evolved, once we got through the politics of the creation of the safe areas and the rather indefinite ways in which it was set up, we talked initially in chronological terms here about crimes committed early on in Sarajevo. Crimes committed against Serbs by the gangster defenders that were part of the garrison of Sarajevo, Tsatso, for example. And in fact, my colleague, Professor Gavrilovic, will talk somewhat more about that because we are still uncovering material. The final report you see in the back of the room actually is no longer final because of evidence he's uncovered in the last 2-3 weeks. And we move on to the terms of engagement. What are the rights of a besieging force, whether it's in Bihać or Gorazda or Sarajevo or Srebrenica or Jepa, doesn't matter. We wanted to be sensitive to the very difficult situation that the Serbian military, the Bosnian Serb military, the VRS, faced in besieging a defended city that was, in some of these cases, certainly a very important strategic objective. At the same time that we have to be sensitive to legitimate concerns that they had in meeting their legitimate military objectives, we became aware that at no point did they seem to give any consideration to what are legitimate military objectives and what lies within the purview of international law. Rather, we saw that simply was not on their radar screen. Nonetheless, as scholars, we felt we had to draw the line between what is and what is not permitted. Much of the evidence that we have accumulated violations of human rights law are anecdotal, and some of which are not sufficiently verifiable. We can put them into the report, but thanks to the ongoing process of the Hague tribunals, we have quite a bit that we can put into the record, and so we feel much less insecure about that. Also, I had mentioned the NED stipends that were so important for the research we conducted. I also want to say that nationalities papers played a role in our research because they gave us what has turned out to be the first volume in this project. And one of the articles is Ben Rusick in the room, a Purdue graduate student who now works for a think tank here in Washington, D.C., and I co-researched and co-wrote an article just on the mortar massacres. And as we were going through the reputed war crimes that were committed, and we certainly wanted to focus in this report on what we would say the three famous, infamous Morta massacres, the Breadline Massacre, and then the two Mercalla massacres. The second one really was not at the Mercalla, but about 100 yards down the street by the Habsburg-era city market. In our research, we faced, as everybody in this project does, a mixture of anecdotal evidence that we can consider but we cannot really cite and say as definitive until we can do more research down the road, and official reports that, and in the case of the Hague tribunals, also evidence that may lead to a conviction. But does an historian really feel that the courts, which have to decide guilty or not guilty, if we can take that a step further and talk about probabilities of responsibility, we historians, this is both a blessing and a curse, can look at a black-white judgment as we're looking at the origin of these three salvos that cost so many lives, and we can talk about the evidence that's there that leads to one conclusion, but that there is anecdotal evidence that has yet to actually crystallize as something that we as scholars can say has validity. But my colleague Darko has also been tracking just one of several of these anecdotal claims cited in newspapers in Banja Luka and Zagreb and elsewhere about other responsibility. But the evidence that we have suggests extremely strong probability that all three massacres were from VRS shelling. But as we say that in the footnotes of this report and in the text, we give not so much the Breadline Massacre, which seems to be the most cut-and-dried case of VRS responsibility, but in each of the two Mercallas, there has to be some evidence of, there has to be some measure of doubt that simply cannot be ignored. And conceivably in the future, evidence could come perhaps from the hands of the people who fired those shells. But we feel that the use of inductive reasoning and looking at the long pattern, as we do in our Morta Massacres article, of mortar attacks that have been freely admitted by the besieging forces, that there was a strong, array of evidence to suggest that all three came from VRS mortars. At the same time that we were focusing in the early part of the report on Sarajevo, we also, of course, looked at other sieges, and in particular Srebrenica. Once again, much as we are looking at Tzatzo and other Bosnian units that did commit crimes that have not really been adequately researched in Sarajevo, we have benefited from the ICTY reports, testimony that places a sizable number of war crimes at the hands of Nasir Oric. And that's in European handwriting, and I don't know how to read that. 2 minutes, yeah. We're doing fine. We're doing fine. Yeah. It's in English, but I can't read it. That in the case of the Srebrenica attacks, the body of evidence, not only that Oric commits crimes, and we have evidence there, and that's in the report. We obviously spend the great focus of that part of the report on the massacres in Srebrenica, and the evidence is overwhelming. And I'm pleased to say that at no point during our process of research and writing where there's any question raised by the scholars, and indeed now even responsible politicians are very much aware of the facts on the ground. So I will skip over that, but I will say that this report benefited from the assistance of many members of the team. We had three Dutch scholars on the team who were behind the NI, two of them who were responsible for the massive NIOD report, Jan Honig, expert on Srebrenica, Bob Donia, an expert on Sarajevo, who contributed 75 pages of a forthcoming book chapter, Viktor Bezrashenko, a Ukrainian scholar who was with the UN in JEPA. The report includes a significant amount on JEPA that we have not heard about up until now. So this was very much of a common effort. Smail Cekic and Mirza Tokarca, who had two institutes in Sarajevo, also have been on board and played a significant role. So this has been a team effort, but I'm going to hand things over to Darko because he has an update on the work he's been doing. And it's easy to do work from the relative calm of Indiana, but it's something else to be a non-nationalist Serbian scholar teaching in Banja Luka and doing the detective work that he has done.